Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be.
That's right. The world will get no better if we just let it be. We got to make the change. We'd like to welcome everyone to Missing Pages of History. This program is dedicated to the upliftment of underserved communities. Our agenda today will entail the major theme is all money ain't good money, destroying our communities. We will have a discussion with an educator, an intellectual, and a political organizer who will share a recent article that he published where it relates to this theme, all money ain't good money. His name is Anwar Mukita. But before we bring Anwar Mukita in, we also will have a discussion with Richmond, Virginia Cultural Ambassador Janine Bell. She will be our Missing Page of History community profile. We will talk about her and her contribution, and we want you to continue to listen to this program. We talk about the many things that are impacting our community. But first, like always, we will start our program with we want to give you something to think about. First thing we want to think about this quote by Malcolm X, in which he once stated, I have always felt that the black leaders whom white men consider to be responsible, invariably the black leaders who never get anything done. What do you think about that quote? Think about that. We'd like to have your views and comments later on that quote. And we'd also like to give you some interesting numbers as relates to U.S. government spending. We're doing some research and we're looking at some figures that relates to the federal budget. And these are some numbers we want you to just think about. What does it mean, and how do you fit in the schemes of things? In 2006, the total U.S. spending was $5,852,700,000,000, $79,825,000. That was our total spending for 2016. Where do you fit in as relates to these figures? We're also looking at the total revenue for 2014, ending up being $5,380,000,000. And when you look at some of the expenditures, you'll find for the climate defense, they spent $82 billion out of that budget amount. They also spent on the general welfare $420 billion under that particular amount. For the economy infrastructure, they're only with $48 billion. For health and Medicare, it was only $47 billion. For standard living and aid to the disadvantaged, it was only $324 million. When you look at uninsured, dental insurance, they only spent like $43 million. So we want you to just think about, as we look at these numbers, where do you fit in the schemes of things? So we gave you something today to think about. And right now, what we want to do is make our transition to one of our members, and that is Sister Susie. She will come and share with you, like always, some Black Mini Facts, some things that you need to know or may have not known. Susie, welcome to Missing Pages.
Okay. Good evening. This is the continuation of the 14 facts about Black history that you may not know. And first, what I'm going to do, I'm going to start off with 9 months ago with Rosa Parks. There was a young woman named Claudette Colvin. On December the 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks refused to relinquish her seat on a public bus. Parks' protest sparked the Montgomery bus protest and galvanized the civil rights movement. Yes, she did. She was not the first African American individual in Montgomery to stand up against injustice in such a manner. On March the 2nd, 1955, 15 years old, Claudette Colvin was riding home on a city bus after a long day at school. A white passenger boarded, and the bus driver ordered Claudette to give up her seat. Claudette refused, and she was later told by Newsweek, "I felt like Sojourner Truth was pushing down on one shoulder, and Harriet Tubman was pushing down on the other. I was glued to my seat." Colvin was arrested for her civil disobedience and briefly put in jail. The NAACP and other civil rights groups considered rallying around Colvin's case in their campaign against Alabama segregation laws before focusing efforts on Rosa Parks' protest 9 months later. Nevertheless, Colvin was one of four plaintiffs in the landmark Browder versus Gale case of 1956, which ruled that segregation laws of Montgomery and Alabama State were unconstitutional. And the next Black history fact I'd like to give you is about Anna Murray, who was the first African American woman to be ordained as an Episcopal priest. This fiery woman exchanged letters with both Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt for many years and was considered one of Eleanor's dear friends. Although her work has rather sadly faded from view, Murray's expertise in law was a vital part of the civil rights movement. She worked closely with icons like Thurgood Marshall and Rosa Parks and was appointed by President Kennedy to the Presidential Commission on the Status of Women in the 1960s, where her work focused on Jane Crow, how discrimination against Black people, particularly and deeply affected Black women, and the ways in which sexism and racism combine to affect Black women. Murray died of cancer in 1985. In the last decade or so, her work has been brought back to light through various efforts, including making her childhood home a National Historic Landmark and a blockbuster dual biography of Murray and Eleanor Roosevelt. the firebrand, and the first lady. And finally, I'd like to give the last one on Octavia E. Butler, who was stylistic, the woman who would come become the first science fiction writer to receive a MacArthur Fellowship and who would win countless awards for her work over a 40-odd-year-long career, struggled with a mild case of dyslexia as a child. Octavia was praised primarily by her mother and grandmother after the early death of her father. A shy child whose dyslexia made her feel stupid, Butler took to hiding out in the library in her hometown of Pasadena. There she discovered iconic science fiction magazines that sparked her desire to write. By the age of 12, she was at work on a story that would become the basis of one of her major series. 17 years later, her first book, Pattern Master, the first of that very series, was published. And I've just given you three small examples of Black History Minute Facts.
We'd like to thank you, Susie. And this point in time, we're going to pause for the calls. And when we come back, we're going to have Mr. Janine Bell, who is Richmond, Virginia Cultural Ambassador, on that segment, MPH Community Profile. We'll be right back. About and Black Minute Facts. We now make our transition to our segment, Missing Patriot History Community Profile. Each week we'll do a profile on one of our outstanding citizens in our communities, and we want you to get to know who that person is. So this week we have chosen our culture ambassador of Richmond, Virginia, Ms. Jeanette Bell, who has done an excellent job of understanding how to use culture as a tool to advance the liberation of our people and our communities. Janine, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History.
Lee, thank you so much for inviting me on today. You are always consistent on the front line, loving yourself, loving our people, sharing information, keeping us moving forward. So I am honored to be in your company.
And we would like to return the favor back to you because Missing Pages of History, Janine, is a institution, is an organization that was created to make sure that the realities of our people, movements and struggles and contribution are properly recognized and recorded. So we want to make sure of all the things that you have done for our people and for humanity that is put in its proper place, and that's into our history book. So this is what we want to do right now. We'd like for you first and foremost, just tell us a little something about who you are.
Well, you know, there's the who, and then there's also the what. So the who, I am African, queen, evolving into my true self, being in that light each day, prayerfully radiating it on all I meet and greet, to be a blessing to somebody in the day, to share knowledge, to share confidence, to discuss and grow. And I do these things via an organization I founded called the Alegba Folklore Society. Alegba, of course, the Yoruba Orisha or intercessor who opens the roads to bring clarity out of confusion. So we operate a year-round lively program of festivals, visual arts and material culture, performing arts, and then also cultural history tours along the trail of enslaved Africans and other notable sites, because in Richmond, Virginia, as you well know, there is so much history hidden in plain sight. Nobody's talking about it in school. Nobody's talking about it in community. Well, I won't say nobody because people are waking up. Hallelujah. And so we just want to lift the veil and reveal ourselves. You know, when we are left out of the dominant historical discourse, like education, then we become invisible. And if we are invisible, it's like we never existed. And so when we look at ourselves in the mirror, then we ask the question, well, who am I and why and what are my next steps? So many of our children are confused in that way, and so we got to just really keep working.
Okay, Janine, you know, one of the things in terms of your works that people are very, very, very familiar with is that you have been able to institutionalize two particular events that not only has impact in the Richmond community, but the community throughout the country. And those two events are the Dale Home Family Union and Kwanzaa every year. Can you just talk a little bit about how do you value or view how that particular, those particular institutions have impacted, you know, our communities from your perspective as being one of the original organizers and originators of these two institutions?
Well, we just hope that these events have been galvanizing in the community, that they have opened up information streams and maybe more significantly affirmation streams for people. We hope that they have, and they have, thank you for calling it an institution. You just don't know. You just keep working, right? But we have, over the decades of these events, seen the multi-generational impact. Families come, the grown-up children come back and bring their children so that we can be in our umoja, which is not just in the Kwanzaa season at the end of the year, our unity, but throughout the year, in celebrating ourselves, knowing ourselves, loving ourselves. And then, of course, we have also the Juneteenth Freedom Celebration, which happens the third week in June, really about liberation in terms of having Independence Day our way.
You know, Janine, can you just finally talk to our listening audience about upcoming activities you can be involved in, and how can they support you and join you in your effort?
Oh, yes, please. The road is rugged. Liberation, the path to liberation is not paved for the easy walk. The path to liberation is one that we have to intentionally choose to travel. So, yes, we want people, if you like it, want to know more about it, come into our cultural center in the city of the city, 101 East Broad Street. Find us online, our website, EFSinc.org. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Send us a message. It doesn't run on fumes. We appreciate your tax-deductible donation, your volunteer time, your suggestions. If you haven't come to something because you got a problem, let's talk about it and work it out. We do the work at the society for the highest good. It's about we and us. So let's we and us be about it together.
And Janine, can you quickly give us a phone number where they can call you for more information and for those who may like to invite you to come to their community to talk about your work?
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? The phone number is 804-644-3900, 804-644-3900. We have lots of programs to travel. If you're listening locally, come by the Cultural Center today. It's our third Saturday documentaries. And we're showing Favela Rising, Africans in Brazil, in concentrated poverty in the favela. But when you put culture in there for the people, all bets are off because we are the ones who are going to thrive because of our very selves. We do our cultural history tour once a month on the second Saturdays. Sign up. Walk in our ancestors' footsteps. They want us to win. Plan for the Juneteenth Freedom Celebration, the third weekend in June. Down Home Family Reunions coming up in August. Summer camp and performances in between. So, you know, let's do it.
And we're going to do that, Janine. We'd like to thank you again for the contributions that you have made and continue to make to our communities and to humanity. We thank you for being Missing Pages History Community Personality of this week. We thank you.
Thank you.
We there. We know at this time we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to our major theme tonight, which is all money and good money destroying our communities. We're going to have a dialogue with a political organizer, an educator, intellectual, Brother Iwali Mukita, and we discuss the theme and the concept of how it is destroying our communities. We'll be right back. You are listening to Missing Pages of History.
Your everything.
And the band played on.
Right, this was a ball of confusion. It's a ball of confusion. We'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages History. Right now, we'd like to go into our theme today, All Money Ain't Good Money, Destroying Our Communities. And with us, we have invited the author of a paper titled All Money Ain't Good Money, The Solid Use of Finance Capital. The author of this paper is Nwalemu Keita. And the reason why we invited this young man was to talk about the connections between our various communities. He has done some research, and some really interesting research, between the connection of the communities, the African communities, particularly Cincinnati and Ohio, to the African and indigenous community in Columbia. We think this is something that needs to be known, and we need to learn from his research. So we brought him in, and he's going to talk about his paper, All Money Ain't Good Money. At this time, we'd like to welcome Brother Nwalemu Keita. Welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Thank you very much for the invitation to participate, and I'm very happy to be a part of your program.
You know, Brother Nwalemu, as we read your paper, you made a direct connection between the African community of Cincinnati and its relationship to the African communities in Columbia as well. Now, one of the things you mentioned, you talk about this question of finance capital, companies and businesses that have an impact on our communities, whether to gentrification or outright just assassinating our brothers and sisters. Will you talk a little bit about what is the similarity between what's going on in Cincinnati, Ohio, as relates to our communities and the communities in Columbia and other countries, based on your paper?
Well, I think that it's important that we understand that the system that we live under here in the United States is the same system that our people throughout the world live under, including Africa, et cetera. Important that we understand that the reason that there are Africans in Colombia or Ecuador or Costa Rica or Brazil or Caribbean islands and those living here in the United States, Canada, et cetera, is because with the development of capitalism and its spread into the Western Hemisphere, given the fact that the indigenous peoples in this hemisphere were victims of genocide, it became important that there be labor available in the Western Hemisphere because the primary means of wealth in Europe was through agriculture. And so, for example, in Cuba, the production of sugar involved mass labor, and so Africans were brought to Cuba to raise and cut sugarcane. And, of course, here in the South in the United States, it was cotton. But every area in the Western Hemisphere was used to produce something to further the system of capitalism. And capitalism outside of its shores is called imperialism. And so in Colombia, the agricultural production was based upon fruit, whether it be pineapples or bananas or other types of fruit that necessitated mass production. And so the interesting thing is that Africans being brought to Colombia, they end up living in an area, Northwest Colombia, where bananas became the primary commodity being produced. And it just so happens that the company that is now or was engaged in that production is called Chiquita Brands International. And Chiquita Brands International is a byproduct of the United Fruit Company, which was the original corporation that began the process of the murderous exploitation of Africans and indigenous people in Colombia around the question of banana production. And so Chiquita Brands International is located here in Cincinnati. And what must be understood about this relationship is that the Africans in Colombia produce the bananas that the Africans in the United States and Cincinnati, et cetera, eat. And that the process by which those bananas are produced involves pretty much the blatant, unbridled exploitation of our people there, along with the indigenous people there. And here, there's no protection of our people. For example, children don't go to school because of the poverty in those areas, that they have to go into the fields, similar to how Africans used to have to go in the fields here to pick cotton, but there they work in the banana plantations. If an African or indigenous person owns land that the Chiquita Brands International wants, then the history has documented that they pay what they call paramilitary organizations to commit murder against those people so that they can steal that land without having to pay. And there are numerous examples of that happening in that area. And so the relationship is that for an African living in the United States and here in Cincinnati in particular, there is a benefit that we derive being in the United States that Africans on the outside don't have, because the wealth of Colombia or the wealth of Ecuador or the wealth of Peru or the wealth of Panama, it is being stolen by U.S. corporations and government and brought to the United States so that there's a pittance of a benefit of that exploitation for Africans here in the United States. And it has to be understood that the standard of living of our people here, although it is still horrendous within the context of the United States, is much better than our brothers and sisters living in these areas. And so what's important about the paper that I wrote was to make people aware that, we are all one people. And I think that's very important to understand. We are African people. We're just scattered in different parts of the world. And the abuse of or the murder of or the oppression of one African or Africans in one part of the world is the same as the oppression of Africans in all parts of the world, because we suffer under the same system. And again, the corporations that are based in the United States are raping our people, and in this instance in Colombia, without pity and without mercy, as Kwame Ture always say. And at the same time, again, it trickles down to us here, but for the most part, the wealth is used for the rich and the wealthy here in the United States. So what Chiquita Brands or the owner of Chiquita Brands is doing is they are also infiltrating the West End here in Cincinnati with a professional soccer stadium, which is being built in the heart of the African community. And here, again, the Africans are going to be forced out, and there are already operations by the FBI and the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the police in the community to begin the process of sanitizing the community for those that will come. And so that was the important point about the papers, because we have to organize ourselves to fight against the oppression and the suffering that we as a people face. So it's not just a question of intellectual discussion about Colombia and about the United States or about the Africans here in Cincinnati. It is about the necessity of organization and the political education of the masses of our people so that we can begin to, we can not begin, but we can further and intensify the struggle against capitalism and imperialism so that we as a people can be free.
You know, Walamu, I thought when I read your paper, you did an excellent job. I would like for you to expand a little bit more on it. When you talk about the question of all money and good money, in terms of look at the form and how we do business in these hidden cities, how we do business as so-called African politicians, how we do business as civil servants, how we do business as corporate people. I'm saying in terms of, you mentioned there's a company in Cincinnati wants to be a soccer stadium in the area at the expense of the African community. And one of the things or one of the ways of how they do this, they, I would say, cut deals with politicians to buy into these projects. These politicians to create laws and rules and regulations where many times they do business, they don't have to pay taxes. And all this is at the expense of our people. So this question where all money is not good money, that's a good example that you articulated in this paper. But can you talk just in general about, based on your research, what would the benefit for African politicians who decided to go along with this whole idea of breaking in the soccer stadium at the expense of genocizing and forcing African people out? What is the incentive for them to do that? Because what I saw in this paper is similar to a city where I live in, where they had the Redskins owner, football team owner, some kind of way convinced the city council to build a facility, a sports facility for them to practice in during the spring. Where the city foot the bill, they pay no money, but yet they say it was a good deal for the city. And what happened at the end is that the city ended up losing money, and they complained that they needed more money from the city if they want the football team to continue to practice in Richmond. This sounds very familiar in terms of what you have in your paper. But my question to you in terms of your research, what does the African politician have to benefit from these kind of deals?
Well, I think one is important, and I don't think I'm saying anything that the average or the common man or woman doesn't understand about being here in the United States, is that corruption rules the political system here, and probably under the head guy here, I can't call him a president, but under Trump, it's very evident that money is what drives the American system, the U.S. system. And I can't even say Trump, because the history says that the first president of the United States was a owner of our people. And so it's the nature of the system in which we live. But the point is that through the struggles of our people, because if you go back into the 50s or the 40s or the 30s, you don't have elected officials because of segregation, because of the system of apartheid that was practiced in the United States that included our people. So you don't have these people even exist, but it's through the struggles of the masses of our people that created windows of opportunity for some of us to assume the mantle of these positions. And particularly it's been amongst the intelligentsia that who have benefited most from the struggles of our people. And so the problem that we have is the enemy, as I would call them, they look for those of us who they can buy. And if you don't have values or principles that are uncompromisable, they know that you have a price. And so the beneficiaries of the struggles of our people who have college degrees and et cetera, and many, most of our politicians are well, very well-to-do people financially, and they're well-educated as it relates to having gone to college, et cetera. They are the ones that the enemy selects to be the representatives of our people, even though they haven't earned it. And so they pay them well to assure that our people are not openly in opposition to the victimization that they will suffer. And again, here in Cincinnati, it is a fact of reality. There were Africans who were on board with the building of the soccer stadium in our community, and that they were paid very well to be those persons that were put on TV and put out front for that purpose. A couple of them were former mayors of the city, et cetera, African mayors of the city, and those types of things. And so that's the relationship between the money, you know, because they will offer you money to sell your people out. And that's why I pose the question where all money ain't good money. And, of course, we know that we live in a capitalist system and that people have to eat, and so they have to have jobs, and so there's no criticism there. But when you are willing to allow your people to suffer, to be jailed, to be murdered, to be exploited and oppressed without being vocal against it, then you are one of those persons stand in opposition to the best interests or the best aspirations of the people. And that's the nature of what is happening here in Cincinnati. And it's not just Cincinnati. It's African leadership around the world. They have accepted the money against the best interests of our people, whether it be in Africa, whether it be in the Caribbean, et cetera. Our leadership is on the payroll, and that's what they call neo-colonialism, where, you know, colonialism, the basic relationships of production and the finances and the money, it hasn't changed. The only thing they change is the ethnicity of the person involved. So instead of having a colonial government of Europeans that oppress and exploit our people, they put in an indigenous government that does the same thing, but you can no longer see the colonialism. And so even here in the city of Cincinnati, although the government is predominantly European, but we don't support them on site, and so they use Africans to be the conduit to manipulate the community so that they will not stand in opposition to the wealth, to what I call the predatory financial interests that are operating inside of our community.
You know, Wallimo, your paper discussed the relationship between the U.S.-based agribusiness and the United States government and their role in Colombia and Central America in the distribution of cocaine and other illicit drugs. Talk a little bit about that relationship for us.
Well, that is a historic relationship that in the struggles that we're confronted with today, the economic struggles, there are only two fundamental issues. In society, either all will own or some will own. And the principle of all will own is a socialist principle, whereby the means of production and distribution and those things are owned collectively by the people, and that for example, the work is not a privilege, it's a right. For example, the housing of a person is not a privilege, it's a right. There are rights that come because we're human beings. and we deserve those as human beings. And what has happened is that to assure that the rights of the people are not materialized, the U.S. government allies itself with all sorts of different forces to make that happen. And so in some countries, they ally with monarchs like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia doesn't even pretend to be a so-called democracy, but it's allied with the United States, even though the United States says that it's for democracy. And so it allows or it promotes or it doesn't say anything about the terrorism and the genocide that Saudi Arabia is committed against the people inside of Yemen. It's just one example. But in Colombia and other countries in Central America, the international distribution of cocaine is a corporation. And the United States government, because the drug trafficking forces in these areas are anti-socialism and anti-the revolution, that the United States allies with them to assure that those forces do not come to power, which means if they came to power, it would mean two things. One, the international drug trafficking would stop because under a socialist government, that would not be allowed. And two, the international multi-corporations that operate in those countries would also cease to be there. And both, I think Cuba is the best example of both of those things happening, where there are no multinationals in Cuba because it's a socialist country, and Cuba is not a conduit for international drug trafficking because it's a socialist country. And so the United States government in Colombia is supporting Chiquita Bananas and other corporations to assure that the wealth of these countries gets to the United States and that there is a good environment for what they call for profits to be made there. The organization that Chiquita Bananas International was supporting is called the United Self-Defense Force of Colombia, which is a paramilitary organization that is allied or a part of the drug trafficking, international drug trafficking community. And Chiquita Brands International was found guilty of giving this organization between the year 1997 and 2004, $1.7 million. But what's important is that 20% of all cocaine in the 1970s came in Chiquita Banana boats through the Baltimore Harbor. And as of 2002, the United Self-Defense Force of Colombia, based on the United States information, government information, controlled 40% of the cocaine trafficking in Colombia. And so it's one system. The U.S. government's role is to protect the vital economic interests of its corporations and industry in the United States and worldwide. And to do that, it historically, whether it's been in Vietnam, whether it's been in Iran, whether it's been in Afghanistan, when they had governments that were against the interests of their people, they were allied also with the forces of international drug trafficking, where in Indochina during the Vietnam War, it was heroin or opium. Afghanistan has been opium and heroin in these areas. And these are a part of the system, and when we talk about imperialism, whereby the U.S. government, to assure that socialism does not come to these areas, ally themselves with drug traffickers who also ally with them to make sure that does not happen.
You know, while we sort of have already started traveling down the road, I was going to lead you into my next question, which was what we must do in order to change the conditions of the oppression and exploitation of African people worldwide, seeing that we suffer from the same fate. What we must do as people here? What would be your suggestion?
As Africans, there is only one solution to the problem by which we face, and that is realizing the objective of Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. There is no question that for a people to be free, their land of origin must be free. The Chinese, for example, in this country, used to be viciously oppressed because China was under the heel of British imperialism. But the Chinese masses led by Brother Mao Zedong. They fought against British imperialism, U.S. imperialism, and China became independent and socialist. And so we as a people, our task today is political education, because we as a people do not clearly understand what we're fighting against and clearly understand what we're fighting for. And so we need mass political education, the mass political education of our people, not here just in the United States, but worldwide. And we need all of our people to belong to an organization that is struggling for the liberation of our people. And you just, we don't necessarily talk about one, because we are the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. But we need organizations in every part of the world that is fighting for the liberation of our people. And without organization, we will continue to be exploited and oppressed. Only in an organized people, and organized people can free themselves from oppression and exploitation. And this is the history of revolutionary struggle, not only in Africa, but throughout the world. And so that is the role and the responsibility of every conscious African, is to join an organization and to help with the political education of our people.
You know, and while we're in your paper, it raises a real interesting phenomenon. It talks about the role, or identified the behavior of the role of the police, the FBI, and the ATF in this process of gentrification of crimes across the U.S. in general, and Cincinnati in particular. How do they manifest themselves in terms of participating in that phenomenon? Because many people believe these are institutions that are supposed to serve and protect, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but there's a link between their behavior and this process of gentrification that is going on in that community. Can you talk to us a little bit about that phenomenon?
Well, the thing about the police is that we have to understand their role under capitalism, because they are police under socialism also, but they play different roles. The intelligence community and the police, their job here in the United States is to assure that there is no organized resistance to the people's oppression and exploitation. And as relates to gentrification, which in my opinion is a very liberal concept, it is colonialism in a different form, only because that when the persons of Europe came to the Americas, the process of colonialism required that they remove the indigenous people from the areas in which they lived. And they did that through the distribution of smallpox blankets, for example. They did it in through the mass murder of the indigenous people, through war, et cetera. And so in this era, it's a little bit more sophisticated, but I'll give one example, or a couple of examples. In Africa today, there is an organization called AFRICOM, which is the U.S. military in Africa, that sanitizes the countries of Africa for blatant exploitation through the utilization of the military to oppress and put down resistance to U.S. economic exploitation inside of Africa. The murder of Muammar Gaddafi, for example, was done through AFRICOM and NATO. And so now we can see what that has done to the social, political, and economic conditions of Libya. So what is being done there is no different what happens with gentrification inside of the United States, which is more domestic. To remove a population, you have to find different ways to do it. And one of the ways is to arrest, to sanitize the community through arrest and just police repression. And so just recently it was announced here in Cincinnati, this is just as an example, that the two areas, the what we call the Over the Rhine and the West End, have been identified as areas that are high crime areas. And of course, for the Africans, they know they're not talking about us, because that's our community, and we don't have fear of our people. But for the people who are moving into the city, crime means that we must go. And the first attack, so to speak, for that to happen here in Cincinnati is where the police are going to start massive arrests. Matter of fact, they've already started. I'm watching it as we our youth on the streets are being harassed on a daily basis and arrested on a daily basis. But they have an operation going on right now that includes the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and the FBI to, quote-unquote, sanitize the environment for finance capital to operate and for people to begin to move in. And so anytime that the United States financial issues, interests are involved, the first thing that history says they do is send the military in to eradicate the resistance. And that is the relationship between how gentrification takes place in this era of history, is that the instruments of repression within the United States are sent into these areas first, and following that becomes the money. But they have to remove us from the streets so that those that are coming into these areas feel comfortable, because they don't feel comfortable around us, so therefore we must go. And that's the relationship between the instruments of repression, and again, I'm using the term instruments of repression to identify the local police, the FBI, ATF, and other instruments that the capitalist system used to assure that there is no resistance to their operations in the communities in which we live.
You know, and while we're in closing, can you just say a few words encouragement to our youth? And for those who would like to maybe invite you to our community to discuss your research or work, how can they do this?
You can visit our website, aaprp-gc.org. Our phone number is there. We very much would like to come into any and all communities to carry our message and to do the work of mass public education. We have intellectuals in our organization that are prepared and willing and want to come to spread information that will help inspire our people to intensify the struggle against those that oppress and exploit us. And, of course, I am one of those persons, and I'm more than willing to come and to share my research and my work. I am a writer, and Tony Kincaid Bambara and John Killen says that the role of a writer of an oppressed people is to make revolution irresistible, and I understand that clearly. So help us, bring us in, help us organize, help us educate, and let us help you organize so that we can fight more intensely as a people to be free.
And on that note, Brother Wilder, we would like to thank you for coming today and sharing your knowledge and expertise on that theme today, Money and Good Money, Destroying Our Communities. We thank you very much.
All right. The pleasure is mine. On behalf of the All African People's Representative Party, GC, we thank you very much.
Okay, listen, audience, you listen to Missing Pages of History. At this time, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we have some public service announcements that are very important we want to share with you. And we'll end the program with how you can help support MPH. So don't you go nowhere. We'll be right back. This is the voice of Missing Pages of History.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black teacher?
soldier. Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
We welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. That's right, we wonder if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? In closing this program right now, we'd like to make a couple public service announcements of significance at this point in time. You know, when we speak about communication, one of the tools for Mr. Page's history is that we are seeking to use communication as a form to improve and advance our community. And how we become, or how do we communicate with one another, is very important. And this is something we want to share with you so you can be aware of the various tools that you may use and understand the pluses and the minuses of using these forms of tools of communication. So right now what we're going to do is turn this public service announcement over to Susie, who's a member and supporter of MPH. Right now, Susie has the article titled, Your iPod Phone. So Susie, the mic is yours.
Hi. Okay. I'd like to let everyone know that your iPhone has a hidden list of every location you've been. It's called a significant locations list, and you probably didn't know it existed. It's hiding in not so plain sight, deep within the depths of your iPhone setting, which is 7 layers deep to be exact. It's a level of location tracking that very few iPhone users are aware of and probably won't feel comfortable with. Sure, many of us know that our iPhones generally track us, but when we use certain apps to enable it to share personalized information like the local weather, coffee shop recommendations, and more. But in a quick survey, the author ran with some friends, not one person out of a dozen people that I surveyed knew where or how to navigate the specific screen that I'm talking about here. It's called Significant Locations List. The Significant Locations List shows a minute-by-minute route of history of your exact whereabouts in every location. It's been over the past few years. Now, for what it's worth, I am actually a huge Apple fan. I generally fall on the side of being more open about sharing data and personal information with tech companies so as to improve my overall customized user experience. I know why they want the data, and that's all right with me, but this is not. When he first discovered this hidden location list, it was a bit much to say the least. The significant location list shows a minute-by-minute route history of your exact whereabouts in every location. And he's been over the past years. How to find a location. One, you open the settings app, navigate the privacy section, a small white hand, blue background. Step three, click on location services. Stroll all the way to the bottom and click the system services. Step five, that'll navigate you to the significant locations. And that article is actually from a gentleman named Jack Coyne. It was written February 25th, 2019, just to make people aware that they're tracking you even more than you had any idea that was going on. Just a little known PSA announcement.
Thank you, Susan, for that PSA announcement, and also we'd like to remind you, in terms of Mr. Paisley history announcement, as many of you have been aware, we were scheduled to have our quarterly rapid fundraiser drawing contest today, but due to lack of participation and support for this particular activity, we had to cancel it, and the next one will be scheduled for June the 6th. We'd like to remind all our planned givers, friends, supporters that we need your support, and without your support, we cannot survive. And we do this thing together. This is how we will build strong communities. So please, we know the conditions are getting rough, but if you can, think about us and try to do a little bit better. But we thank you. So on that note, what we're going to do right now, we're going to close out with this whole message. So we'd like to thank all our guests today, Sister Janine Bell, who is Ritual Cultural Ambassador, and to our writer, intellectual, and political organizer, Wally Mukita, for sharing his experiences and his research with us as related to our theme today, All Money Ain't Good Money, Destroying Our Communities. And we'd like to remind you to remember, MPH Radio comes on every other week, every other Saturday, from 1 to 2 p.m. You can contact us at Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com. All contributions and donations can be sent to MPH Inc. at P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Coming up this fall, we'll be doing a live TV program, which comes on Wednesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. on Comcast Channel 95 and Fio Channel 36. We are still continuing our T-shirt and cap fundraiser drive. So if you have that purchase and cap or T-shirt, please email us or go to our website to see those activities and other programs that we are coordinating and planning. You can do that by going to www.mphinc.org. Until next time, let's all remember to subscribe to Go Forward Apple, Bible Stable, and we'll see you in 2 weeks on Missing Pages of History. We thank you.